You're listening to WMIE, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 91.5 FM, as well as W272BA, Cocoa Beach, and Vieira, FM 102.3.
Bravely here is risking her life going in front of David and being abused by her husband should he survive this. She's searching for solutions, but she's applying who she is. She's not trying to be somebody else. She's not trying to be one of the guys. She has virtues, and they are unwasted, and we're seeing them in action. And we know how difficult this is, because when you and I fail doing what we know the scripture says, we feel it.
This is Cross Reference Radio with our pastor and teacher, Rick Gaston. Rick is the pastor of Calvary Chapel, Mechanicsville. Pastor Rick is currently teaching through the book of 1 Samuel. Please stay with us after today's message to hear more information about Cross Reference Radio. Specifically, how you can get a free copy of this teaching. And now here's Pastor Rick in 1 Samuel chapter 25 as he continues his message, Unwasted Virtue.
This life stirs wrath and doubts. That's what it does to the righteous. Now, you may be a Christian, a new Christian, 10 years or so. You really don't have that much time, maybe, in action. You got to give it time. It will come, and you will have all of your virtues and beliefs challenged, and you'll have to stand up to them. And that's what Paul is saying. He's saying, look, I know what it's like to be angry at things. I know what it's like to have doubts, but we can't give in to this. We can't just say, get your swords, every man, and just go ahead forward with the wrath. Romans 12, he writes to that group of Christians. He says, repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. Now, what if somebody just read that to David? I think he would say, yeah, tell me when I get back to my harp. But right now, it's sword time. Anyway, verse 14. Now, one of the young men told Abigail. Now, Abigail comes really close up in the picture. Nabal's wife, saying, look, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he reviled them. Yeah, he did. This young man knew that this was not going to have a happy ending the way it was going. He also knew who not to go to. He does not go to Nabal and say, hey, you'd really messed up. He's going to kill everybody now. But he goes to Abigail. That tells us that she was approachable, that she could do something, that she was not just, you know, just good looking. He's trusting her. She's virtuous. She's wise. She's industrious. She's got qualities that, again, wasted on this fool, but not wasted. Verse 15, but the men were very good to us, and we were not hurt, nor did we miss anything as long as we accompanied them when we were in the fields. He's confirming David's words to his men. And then to Nabal in verse 8, the shepherds in those days. You remember in the book of Genesis when Joseph said, oh, my family's all shepherds. The Egyptians said, you're shepherds. Those guys are thugs. They carry daggers and they kill you. I mean, they're very protective of their flock. They're not the most noble people you come across. And that's why the Egyptians disdained them. Well, why were they like that? Because out in the wilderness, there's no 911. You're it. And people wanted, you know, sheep, livestock, and oxen. They're like gold. What happened to all of Job's livestock? They came and stole it. So these were tough men. And yet, David's men were tougher. And they could have taken the sheep and killed them. And that's the point that they were trying to make to Nabal. Look, we could have just taken your stuff. And because we didn't, and not only did we not, you benefited from it. How about just a thank you note? Now, that doesn't put him under a contract. We might get to that in a minute, but let's go to verse 17. Now, therefore, know and consider, he's still talking to Abigail, what you will do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his household. They could see it in the eyes of those men. When they walked out, they just daggers in their eyes. He continues, for he is such a scoundrel that one can't speak to him. He can't even talk to the guy. So he's venting. He's a servant venting to Abigail. This is her husband, but he knows, you know, she's not an irrational woman. He knows he can say this at a moment like this. I don't think he'd just do it, you know, just on the fly. But this moment dictated a severe situation was dictated to them. What to do, Abby? What are you going to do? They're coming to kill us. And she does what I would never have thought to do. My way would have failed. I would have armed the men, set a perimeter and ambushes, you know, just tactics. Fire with fire. She uses water on fire, and she prevails. She pursues peace with dignity and reason and products and goods, armed with reason and food. How do you stop a charging army of men? Food. You put up a salad bar, that won't do it. But if you put a meat bar up, then maybe that you'll get them. Anyway, New Testament rings in on this behavior of this woman. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. She is a peacemaker. If you were to go to your Bible and have to say, okay, name three people in the Bible who are peacemakers, she have to be on that list. And we're going to see in a moment. Oh, he says, for he is such a scoundrel. I'm in verse 17. That one cannot speak to him. Literally a son of worthlessness, Belial. It is like the ultimate word of contempt on someone. And this, so if you had to name a list of scoundrels in the Bible, guess where Nabal would be? He'd be on the short list too. So awful was this man that other adjectives had to be called in to describe him. Noxious, extremely unpleasant person. We have a lot of words in our language to describe a person like this, but they're not good from the pulpit. Or many other places. Verse 18, and Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep already dressed, 5 seth of roasted grain, 100 clusters of raisins, 200 cakes of figs, and loaded them on the donkeys and a partridge in a pear tree. She's on the ball. They have a warehouse. He's got a large, you know, working ranch. A lot of hands, they got to feed these people. That's why this food is there ready, and plus it's festival time. She goes, kicks right into action. There's no indication that she hesitated. It's like when Abraham, when the visitors came to Abraham, he's running to Sarah. Quick, get it. She grabs a lamb and dresses it, and he's running, scrambling. Well, here, she's not scrambling to entertain company that popped in unannounced. She is scrambling for their lives. And we can't lose sight of that. They are afraid they're all going to be slaughtered. It was not uncommon in those days. No time to tell the fool. He would have only gotten everyone killed anyway. She makes haste another time in this chapter, and it's when it's time to marry David. It's another interesting part of the story. Continues in verse 18, and took 200 loaves of bread. Well, you got the list there. We don't have to reread it. But not only to appease David, but to compensate him. To say a worker is worthy of his wages. Now is her chance, though. She's missing an opportunity. She can be rid of the fool. She can go in the opposite direction and just take a walk in the park for a while and come back and he'll be gone. David would have done her dirty work. But there were others. You see the magnificence of this woman? There were other people there. It wasn't just Nabal. Maybe if it was just him, she would have said, what, they're coming to kill David? I got a good idea. Let's go up on the hill and collect some daisies. We'll be back in about 3 or 4 hours. David could have rid himself of Saul with one thrust of his sword. And Abigail rid herself of Nabal by a walk in the park, but she does not. She could have escaped the hardship instantly. But God was perfecting her as he was David through hardship, as he does us, and none of us like it. James tries to tell us, you know, count it all joy when you enter into various... Look, I don't count it joy. I'm sorry. I have a hard time with that, James. But thanks for putting it in my head. Now I have guilt too. Selective hardship's not bad. It's the ones that you really hate that seem to get under your skin. And in this case, it would be swords. They have a way of getting under your skin that's unique. Anyhow, David with his 400 men versus Abby with her raisins and donkeys and and her beauty and her wit, and David's going to lose. It is a contest. It is a contest of influence. Who is influence? Is David's quest for revenge more intense than Abigail's appeal for peace? Well, she's a wise woman because she does not go empty-handed. She combines wit with gift. She doesn't say, well, I'm just going to trust the Lord and, you know, talk to him. She kicks those servants into gear. And that's a lot of, it's a donkey convoy coming his way. Verse 19. See little CBs on the donkeys. Break one. I don't know if people even use CBs anymore, if they even say break 1:9. Anyway, and she said, verse 19, and she said to her servants, go on before me. See, I am coming after you. But she did not tell her husband Nabal. As I commented about that part, the last, her not telling him already, she needed them to instantly obey, to comply with their instructions, which they did. That's a very big plus. I mean, because one of them could have said, what? That's not going to work. We need to fight this guy or run for our lives. We could take him, you know, meat. That's, you just can't throw meat at an army. But she does. Nabal's meanness, it made him a fool. He was mean, and therefore he was foolish. He is the village idiot of the story, and he's super rich. He has no excuse for this. It's not like he was repeatedly dropped on his head as a kid. He opts to be nasty, and he created this disaster, and he can be no part of the solution. And yet, she has suffered him for who knows how long. She's doing what she has to do. She, this Abigail, employs tactics that we find Jacob using against his approaching brother with his army of 400 men, Esau. We'll find out as we go through this that she is a student of the book of Genesis. She throws out words that we find in Genesis at the right time. She uses a speech that Judah used when he spoke to Joseph that finally broke Joseph down and made Joseph chase everybody out of the room, and then he reveals himself with tears to his brother. She was very familiar with the book of Genesis. She was a woman of the word, and she bravely here is risking her life going in front of David and being abused by her husband should he survive this. She's searching for solutions. But she's applying who she is. She's not trying to be somebody else. She's not trying to be one of the guys. She has virtues, and they are unwasted. And we're seeing them in action. And we know how difficult this is. Because when you and I fail doing what we know the scripture says, we feel it. Verse 20, so it was, as she rode on the donkey, that she went down under cover of the hill. And there were David and his men coming down toward her, and she met them. She didn't meet them like, hi, my name is Abigail, how are you? Of course, someone recalled that she was out of sight down that hill for a moment and put it in the story, a very real part of the story. And she surfaces. And incidentally, I don't know when we'll get to this. Of course, she becomes the wife of David and into the palace life, but we don't read of her anymore. My thinking is, she said, David, look, I love you. I have a ranch, and I'm going back there. You come visit when you want, because I can't take the palace life, the gossip, the drama, the hatred. I'm out of here. I believe that was because she's too wise to sit there and just be one of the potted plants in the midst of all that. Anyway, you'll find out I'm right when you get to heaven, and you will be expected to tell me that when you get to heaven. Hey, Rick, you were right about Abby. All right, verse 21. Now, David had said, surely in vain I have protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belongs to him, and he has repaid me evil for good. Why is he bothering to talk to her? Because she sent the goods ahead of her, just like Jacob did, to break it, get him. Like, what is all this? Well, we're not opening up a roadside stand, David. It's for you. And he knows this. He knows his men need this. And so she's already working on him. I just love it. I don't know. I wish I had that kind of ability to shut up people and make them very happy, attacked, you know, not go away enemies. Anyway, verse 21. And David says, surely in vain I have protected. So he's sort of venting at the same time to her. You've benefited from this. Why have I been insulted? Because you overestimated the decency of Nabal. That's why you got into this mess. Yeah, he was not under covenant with you, David. You just expected him to be decent. And again, if it was the right of Nabal to say no, it was not his right to insult, verse 22. But then it wasn't David's right to kill him for it either. Verse 22, may God do so and more also to the enemies of David, if I leave one male of all who belong to him by morning light. Well, this is a rash oath of a good but angry man. It will be neutralized by the virtuous woman. Reminds us of Jephthah and his silly oath. Whatever comes out of the house. Okay, that's a fair oath. And then it's his daughter. Whatever comes out first. Now he doesn't have to uphold the oath. Never is a pledge to do evil for us to uphold. An evil pledge is not binding on a believer. If, for instance, I'm going to rob a bank. Oh, I said it, now I got to do it. That's silly. No man is bound by an oath of evil. And David, of course, he's just totally in the flesh. Satan is using Nabal to try to get to David, to destroy him. He is also sifting David and Abigail at the same time, and God is allowing that part of it. Now, David uses very strong language here when he says, if I leave one male, one man. It's crass language. It's used as a word of contempt in the Old Testament when judgment was coming on those who were just held in contempt. They were going to be annihilated because they were just not worth living. And if you have the old King James, it's very strong. The translators of the ancient translators, they use a very strong word. And so basically it says those who urinate against the wall. That's the literal from the Hebrew. I mentioned to you earlier that the Hebrew is rich with some of these thoughts. The translators filter some of them out because they become a distraction. And rightfully so. Not rightly that they become a distraction, but some of them need to be filtered out because it's lost in the culture and the age that we live in and just so many other factors. Anyway, verse 23, now when Abigail saw David, she dismounted quickly from the donkeys, fell on her face before David, and bowed down to the ground. And so now the true engagement begins between the two. We're not just getting what's in David's head as we were getting earlier. Now they're going to discuss it. Again, sometimes we should fight fire with water, not with fire, and that's what she's doing. She approaches him in a posture of submission and reverence at the same time. And this was common. David approached Saul this way. It is another gesture found in the book of Genesis when Jacob approaches Esau under similar conditions. Who knows what her morning devotions, maybe she had morning devotions as she was reading the story in Genesis. Verse 24, so she fell at his feet and said, oh, my Lord, on me let this iniquity be. Please let your maidservant speak in your ears and hear the words of your maidservant. Abigail, it is not your fault when you say, let this iniquity be on me. But as is the way it is in human, somebody who does something wrong and then you deal with them, why do you feel guilty? I don't know about, I do sometimes. I deal with somebody who just is wrong. And then I have a little guilt. This is what people like Nabal can do. And that's why we say to her, well, maybe try, don't want to do that to someone else. Do something wrong to them and they feel guilty for my wrong. This is a little bit of what we're getting from Abigail because she's just such a nice gal. So she seeks permission from David to state her case. And he yields to this. Proverbs 18:13, he who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. So David is going to hear her out. Now the proverb is penned by Solomon much later, but it was likely something similar already in existence. And there are things that a woman can do dealing with men like this that a man cannot do and expect the same results. If that male servant had come to David like this, he might not have been so ready to listen to him. But he sees the goods, he sees the woman, and he dials it down a little bit in verse 25, at least enough for her to state her case. Please, verse 25, let not my Lord regard this scoundrel Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your maidservant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Well, she get that out. It's been pinned up a long time. She probably had a lot more to say, but now's not the time. The circumstances dictated that she discloses her knowledge of this man and her position about this man as she is interceding for his life. She could say, can you just kill him? She could leave. Wait, look, the other people, they're innocent, but if you take him out, plenty more raisin cakes where that came from. So Nabal, he was rich and he was mean. It was a common combination. And I have another W.C. Fields quote. I found them in my notes from last time. You know, these are really good. Talking about mean people, W.C. Fields said, I start every day with a smile and get it over with. I think I'm going to try that. Don't you ever smile? I do when I wake up. Anyway, back to this vile person. He says, but I, your maidservant, verse 25, at the bottom of the verse, did not see the young man of my Lord whom you sent. She is saying, you know, you're right, David, and I would have dealt with this differently. I'm in agreement with you. And so he's finding a companion in spirit, and she's saying, you have friends in the camp. Kind word turns back wrath. And he's giving her time to do that. This is her wisdom, her insights, her gifts, all of this together. It's a combination of these things, no single thing. Verse 26, now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, since Yahweh has held you back from coming to bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hand, now then, let your enemies and those who seek harm for my Lord, be as Nabal. Well, when she says here, as your soul lives, you've been held back from bloodshed, well, he could have just killed her. I mean, he's enraged. Somebody else might have done that. She knew God sent her to this very moment for this purpose, and he does too. He's going to admit it later. And she quickly brings the Lord, the covenant name of Yahweh, to the front, knowing that David will honor that. Saul would do it, but Saul didn't mean it. But David knows, I think. I think that as she's speaking, she certainly is gauging the moment. If she looks at him in his face, she's going to see in his countenance that there is kindness behind those angry eyes, because she never finds it in Nabal. You could say she would have been trained to notice the absence of kindness. And when she detects there is kindness, she continues to go forward. And so far, so good. But she still hears the bomb ticking. It's not totally diffused. There's still more to be said. And she knew about avenging herself firsthand because of whom she lived with. I mean, she could have probably put the wrong kind of mushrooms in the stew one night. Of course, that might be a reach on my part, but it is her character would never have done it. Anyway, David, she is saying, you will be guilty of breaking the law. Exodus 23, it makes it clear, you're not to punish the innocent with the guilty. And David was going to wipe out all the men, and they were innocent. And she is bringing that up. God is withholding your hand from bloodshed, she says. Now then, let your enemies and those who seek harm for my Lord be as Nabal. What does that mean? Only thing that can mean is Nabal really is harmless. He can't beat you, David. And I hope all of your enemies are like that. I hope Saul can never beat you, and no one else. And that's, David went to his grave unbeaten. He lost a battle here and there, but he was not killed on the battlefield, and he had spent a lot of time there. So she says, may they, your enemies be weak. He's liking that. Verse 27, talk about, you get more with honey than vinegar, man. She is just masterful at this. And now this present which your maidservant has brought to my Lord, let it be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Now she's got his leadership out in the open. David could say, you know what, I'll take him anyway and still kill everybody. But of course, she knows that he is a greater man than this. And David, He is certainly got to be encouraged by this and impressed by her spirit, her tone, her words, her humility, all of it brought to bear, all of it brought to the front, the scriptural truths that she is using. She did not just use God's name, she also uses his word.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of Cross Reference Radio. This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Rick Gaston of Calvary Chapel, Mechanicsville in Virginia. Currently, Pastor Rick is in the book of 1 Samuel. If you'd like to listen again to this or other messages or share it with someone you know, please visit crossreferenceradio.com. Here, you can also listen to interviews with Pastor Rick to learn more about his life and ministry. We encourage you to subscribe to our podcast so you'll never miss another edition. All you have to do is find us on your favorite podcast app. You can also access full-length video messages on YouTube. So many options are available to you. Again, if you're not sure where to go, just go to crossreferenceradio.com for resources. Tune in again next time for more Cross Reference Radio.